Welcome to the Analytics Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. This is Sunday Strategy Session. I wanted to do a few of these over the summer. I'm going to have some guests here as well. So this is going to be one. It's not going to be like a consecutive summer type deal just because that's probably just not how it's going to end up happening. But I did want to start getting them out there because I know people have asked about this. I've talked about this. I'm going to write about this in 2023 as well. But I sort of wanted to do like an inside the writer's room type strategy session here. Just some stuff that I'm working on and thinking about. And so there's really one of the questions is with depth that I get a lot. Like, how do you fix depth? I don't think depth is that big of a deal. I think it's probably overstated. I say this a lot. I think stars win. I think that, your big time players win, your supermax quarterbacks win, right? They raise the floor and the ceiling for your teams, right? In your tight end premium leagues, your tight ends win, right? They're floor and ceiling raisers. The 20th person on your depth chart doesn't make a ton of difference. And just remember something, like, and I think I've done this exercise. I think I went through a prior draft, but like the guys that you pick, if you're doing it right, the guys that you pick from round 16 to 30, maybe 2-3, if you're lucky, 4-5 of them will land. But there's a pretty good chance that you get the order way off. Like when you go back and look at it, in a year or in 6 months or in weeks, right? It's like, wow, I can't believe I got Darrell Williams in the 26th round last year when I took Breida in round, 17, right? Like, wow, I can't believe that's how it ended up working out. But ultimately, like, my numbers were in the right spot, and I just sort of have to hope they know that the numbers being in the right spot work out, right? So there's a lot of that goes on. So one thing that I would say is a general strategy. So generally, I think depth, people get worried about depth too much. Your stars will win. The difference between running back 50 and 100 isn't terribly different in terms of what you would expect, right? Neither of them are going to move the needle much. The same thing with wide receivers, right? If you have to go out on the waiver wire and get one and start one, that person might be roster wide receiver 60. And if you're rostering some depth wide receiver, that wide receiver might be, I don't know, projection 40 in a week. The difference between that is only a couple of points. And so with a whole bunch of margin for error on both players, right? Because one for 85 and one is a massive game, right? That ends up being, 15 points where, 2 for 6 and 0 ends up being 2.6, right? Like just where, the one guy gets tackled by the shoestring and it's a major difference, right? So a lot of that stuff, it just becomes a lot of variance, a lot of noise at the deeper parts of the position. And it's something that, frankly, I don't think we're that great, especially at wide receiver. I don't think we're particularly great at addressing it in advance or even being able to sort it out how it's gonna unfold, especially when you're talking about the difference between the guys that might see 3-4 targets, something like that, right? That there's a whole bunch of margin for error there that I have come to the conclusion of, like, I'm not gonna let that define my strategy. Let my stars win, and then we can figure out that aspect of the roster later on. So that's my general gist of it, is I think it's a second or third order problem. I don't think it's a major problem. I think trading from depth to stars is the most important thing that you should do. And then constantly trying to backfill at depth is something that you should do after that, right? When you create roster spots, when you do those sorts of things, that's stuff that you can do after that. The other thing I would say is I don't really pay from depth. I don't pay for a ton of depth, right? I try and create depth in a way that is, cheap, right? Or it's arbitrage, or it's, free is different ways to do it. There's, and we'll talk about some ways that I do it later. some specific ways that I do it, but depth is a low cost thing, right? We talk about, we're doing some auction strategy. We'll have an auction podcast coming up. I'm looking, you know, at some ideas for some auction stuff and about what it might suggest about some team building stuff and the like. But generally speaking, I want to be stars and scrubs in an auction format, right? Really aggressive on that, right? Because I want my stars, and my stars matter, and we can figure out like the areas after your stars are much, much flatter. Right? You think about your contributing assets, your partial contributors, right? Just look at where the lines are in those hierarchy of assets. It's pretty smooth and not that big of a deal. So those are some of the things that I just think about as general principles. I'm not super worried about depth. I'm not trading star players. I'm not trading down to fix depth, right? Trading from, you trade from depth to get stars. You don't trade stars to get depth. That is a one-way street, and you should never go the other way, right? And that's a lot of this time when I say, hey, are you getting the best player in the deal? Are you getting the two best players in the deal, right? If you're getting the best player in the deal, a lot of times that's pointing in the right direction. That's not always the right answer. But in most trades, if the two best players are on the side that you're getting, you're winning the deal most of the time. Right? It has to be an extreme exception for that not to be true. But that's definitely the way that which you're pointing, right? So that's the way that I would really think about it. Again, so if there's a package of, so just think of it this way. If you're trading for two top 20 guys and you're trading six depth players, right? Almost without, you know, if they're contributors or the like, right? Almost without knowing who they are, I can tell you that you want the top two guys. Almost always that's the right answer. So really go in and be pointing in that direction. The other thing, and I'm working on a trade piece too for the book. One of my rules of trading is never trade a difference maker for depth, right? That sort of goes along that line. So those are really some thoughts that I generally have in terms of the direction, right? We want to be moving up the hierarchy of assets and backfilling the rest, right? That's kind of the way that you do it. So really some four different ways. And I guess there's four major ways that I would think about doing it. And again, these are low cost type deals for me, right? So work the waiver wire, constantly work the waiver wire. And remember, when you are in, when it's May, you don't have a running back need. You don't have a receiver need. You have a need for good assets. And this is a good example, right? You don't need to trade for a player that definitely is going to make your lineup in week three, right? Because you don't know that, right? And if you're doing it right, you're building around backup running backs and you're taking anti-fragile strategies. So that way, when everything breaks, you're actually better, right? And that's kind of what you're looking to do. That's why we build around a lot of running backs. And so the needs that you might have, and whether they be depth or specific roster needs, you don't necessarily know that, or you might not even necessarily, the solution that you come up with might not actually even work when you're looking in this particular range of the calendar, right, in the summer. And just remember, the hit rates are really low on guys outside the top 100. And so if you start applying that forward, remember that if I'm adding those guys to try and fix depth, if I'm trying to fix need, like those are low probability bets, right? So don't get hung up too much on doing that. You know, make your moves so you're moving from low probability to high probability. And then you can backfill another, you know, there's plenty of low probability bets around and we should just continue cycling through them. That's definitely one of the things, working the waiver wire cheap. This part of the calendar, and I've talked about this, cheap on the waiver wire outside of a difference maker. You know, first waiver run, maybe there's a difference maker. I know some people like Gronkowski, like Geno Smith is a popular one. But by and large, $1, $2 here, you know, a 1%, 2% type bets. You know, if you're doing that, if it's out of 100, you know, I do a lot of them out of 1,000 is the waiver wire budget. So small incremental bets, I want to take a lot of them, especially at this time of the calendar, constantly sort of tinkering. And again, then trading and clearing roster spots and continue to churn that process. That's really the big thing. So working the waiver wire should never stop. And that should always be something that you're doing. The next thing that I would really point to, so this would be like, I don't know if it's rule number two, but piece of advice number two in terms of tactics, turn players into liquid picks deeper down your roster. Okay, this might seem antithetical or, you know, against sort of the idea of building depth of your players, but really what you're trying to accomplish is depth of assets and the ability to address a need when you have it. Right. So if you were to think about this in the context of, you know, I was watching some stuff on like World War One recently, and you see the guys and, you know, they're in the trenches or whatever, and there's the battles are going on, and there's a bunch of people up there. Right. And you want to be able to sort of stop the initial line of attack and the like. And then you have a lot of reserves back behind. Right. And I think I forget what the movie was. It was something about the guys in the front line, but they were they spent like 6 day rotations up there and would basically cycle through every 6 days. They would be in and then they'd come out for a month and then 6 days in and then out for a month or whatever on the front line. But they would be back in reserves, you know, training or resupplying, whatever they were doing, but still available to, stop a large breakout, or if there's a problem with a specific place on the line or something like that, there's a tech, they're right there to fill it, right? It's the same way with our lineup stuff, right? We should have our starters out there, right? Our starters are sort of in there, and then we're constantly tinkering on the back part of our rosters to try and make it better, right? And so one of the ways that I think about this is like, all right, you don't need to throw all your assets into, you know, being able to fill your first running back situation, your first wide receiver situation off the bench, your first tight end, right? You don't need to necessarily know what the priority is, but be able to address them when they come up, right? So like, hey, on the left-hand side of the line, there's been a breakthrough. Okay, well, we can send this group over here, right? And that's kind of like the picks, right? It's kind of like the way I would see it with picks. There's a leak in your team, and you say, okay, well, now I have some depth of picks at which I can deal from. Individual player X might not have be super useful, but if I trade individual player X in August for a second, when the time comes that I actually might have a roster need, when I might have some depth problems, I can trade that second for Tyler Lockett or Allen Robinson or whoever it is, right? The same thing is true with depth running backs, right? This is particularly true with depth running backs, right? There's really two things that you have them for, either to use them or to trade them for either better assets or help. And so that's something that I think you should constantly do. So again, blending these things together, right? You get uptick guy. He's now worth the second because, hey, he's going to get some spot starts. You turn him into a pick and then work the waiver wire, right? And you're cycling through that process and you're constantly trying to get better. But now you've just pocketed assets, right? You've got some, whether it's money in reserve or, you know, if we're using our military analogy, you got some troops in reserve, you got the cavalry there, right? The cavalry is your picks, right? That's sort of the way that you're looking at it. So turn players into liquid picks will help you, and it allows you to circle back through the waiver wire. And that's something that I really think is, if you do it a lot, you'll be ahead. And it's kind of marginal gains, right? Remember that outside the top, you know, 150, if you can get a second round pick for somebody, you're probably ahead. Just as a general rule, you know, if you get a first for someone outside the top 100 that was outside the top 100 in startup valuation, that's almost always the right answer. Just historically the odds, you know, and I say never really draft or never trade a first for someone outside the top 30, right? But that really 30 through 100 range can be, you know, there's a lot of blend there, and that's a kind of a bit of a directional issue and stuff like that. How much do you want to turn your team over and the like? I think that's a little bit more a personal taste type of range of your team. But yeah, outside the top 150, like if there was someone in ADP you can at 180 that you can get a second round pick for, you should probably do it, right? Because then your odds long term on that player isn't particularly good, but you can cycle it back through with someone that's honestly much closer to the player from the waiver wire than that liquid second round pick is, and the second round pick then can go ahead and fill your roster. So that constantly is a churn is something you should constantly keep in mind in terms of working the depth and really creating more depth on the back of your roster. The third one is arb down at running back and wide receiver while staying in the same range of security and assets. You know, and I think like this is easier maybe said than done. But we look at this, and you know, I have some examples of these that have happened where, you know, and honestly, there's some mistakes that I made along the way too, where I had the ability to trade. I think it was Nick Chubb for Dalvin Cook, and it was somebody else. It was another decent running back. It wasn't like James Robinson. It wasn't James Conner, but it was like someone somewhat like that. I forget. It was a couple years ago, but I made the mistake of not doing it, and I've come to much more appreciate the fact that that would have been the right deal. Even though I like Chubb more than Cook, I was getting additional assets in the deal, and I would have had the, you know, I was basically arbing, right? I was arbing down the position. And it was Aaron Jones. This was like pre Aaron Jones breaking out, but I'm arbing down the position, right? There's two bets that are relatively close to each other in Chubb and Cook, and then I'm getting an extra asset on top of that. Like, that's the right way to go, right? And it's not bailing on. See, there's a difference between, you know, trading Jonathan Taylor for Leonard Fournette and Rashad White, right? Something like that, where you're way going down the board. This is more in the middle of the board, right? In the sort of core range, right? If you can trade between cores and add another core, that's excellent. You can trade between stars and add a core, that's excellent, right? That's sort of the idea that you're thinking about in terms of your hierarchy of assets. Moving down within those tiers, same relative risk profiles, right? Multi-year of commitment, great. Boom, we'll move it along. One of them that I did last year, I actually learned some of that lesson, and it was from Nick Chubb. It ended up being to David Montgomery. I ended up getting 104, 106. It actually helped turn my team around. My team ended up being a really, really good team in that league. I got a future first as well. But really the key of it was David Montgomery and Nick Chubb were in the relative same tier with one another. Right? They weren't that different. And sort of being willing to arb down at that, I was able to turn that 101 into basically three additional future first, because I viewed the move from Montgomery, from Chubb down to Montgomery, as being a lot more palatable than maybe some other people would have done. And as a result of that, I was really able to extract some assets there. So that was a... that's an example of that. You know, we see some other stuff at receivers, constantly sort of moving down at the position is something that I like to do a lot. You know, I have some deals where last year it was like Hopkins to Keenan Allen, and I got Jameis Winston. And that was really able to flesh out my depth, right? And I talked about this, I think it was either in AOD 2022 or maybe the rebuilding guide, one of the two. But I went through that about how I was basically able to use that tactic. And really, that is one of the things in this, and I probably should make this like a fifth rule, is that when you're doing this, the roles and the profiles, if you will, right, the profiles that these players represent are much more important than the names that are on the back of the jerseys, right? So, again, 150 targets. That's better than a 125 target guy with a super sexy name in the dynasty trade market. And if that's basically, you know, if you're sort of willing to go with that, you can get a lot of opportunities to make these moves and constantly be thinking of arbing down, sliding down the position, similar range of production, similar range of security, and pick up additional assets, right? That's the way to build out a lot of depth and to solve a lot of your issues, right? So that's some stuff that I really think, if you're constantly churning those ideas, that's a lot of stuff that's really good. You know, the middle part of the tight end range is nice to do that with as well. You know, if you get, you know, anything outside the top handful of wide receivers, really, anytime you can sort of move down, right, there's plenty of guys to, you know, and it's not everyone, right? You don't want to move from, you know, you don't probably want to arb from, you know, I don't know, Jalen Waddle to Chris Olave, right? Like, that's probably too far, and it's probably not exactly what you're trying to accomplish. But a different example might be Davante Adams is at wide receiver 10 or so, and Mike Evans would be down at wide receiver 25, right? And there's three or four rounds of startup equity in there. You know, you can accomplish something in a trade down like that, right? Assuming you don't already own Mike Evans. But, you know, those things are really the things that you're doing. Similar profile, similar age, similar risks. And especially where you think, hey, this guy's like kind of bound to fall. And a lot of times it's, hey, you can't trade. You know, it's really tough to trade a guy that's up at the top of the board right now for a younger guy in a future first, right? And you think about some of these people that are making suggestions like, oh, you have to get out on this 28-year-old wide receiver. Well, sometimes the way to get out isn't to trade him for a 23-year-old. It's to trade him for another 28-year-old, right, and an additional asset. And I think that that's a way that you can bury a lot of stuff in there that sometimes people will miss in the trade negotiations that I found to be particularly successful. Other ideas, too, when you can trade from unproven guy, and just remember, like, the third round valuation at wide receiver for a guy that hasn't hit yet has a very similar production profile, production expectation of a seventh rounder who's hit multiple times, right, at wide receiver. So think of yourself sort of moving along that line and sort of making that pivot, arbitraging players. Those are, if your goal is to win, those trades are there and available for you, and you can really you can pick up some additional depth and liquidity on your roster by willing to move down. One way also, and this is kind of I'll dovetail this into the fourth thing that I would say is trade down, but this is trade down in rookie drafts, trade down in startup drafts, and trade down in your roster. It's similar to arbing, but it's with picks instead of players. In a rookie draft this year, just for example, there was in the trade database, I was just looking through for ideas and some writing ideas and some my own personal team building ideas, and I saw 202 for 210 and Juju Smith-Schuster. And that feels a lot like a very free thing, right? You start plugging in your holes, and you're plugging in players in those holes. It's maybe Rashad White for Brian Robinson and Juju Smith-Schuster, right? Similar profiles at the running back position, and we're letting someone else take a very specific bet. You know, we're having a very modest approach to the differences between those profiles, as long as we're taking the similar profiles, right? Don't give away that edge by, you know, saying, oh, I could take a day two running back, or like, oh, I'll take a day two wide receiver and Juju in the late second, and boom, I'm double hitting it. Like, that's not the bet you want to make. But, you know, being attuned to those things, right? You know, for example, you know, someone that I know is in a startup draft right now, and he's like, I'm thinking about trading down. He's like, I want to get a future first. And he's like, yeah, you know, I'm trying to trade from like the sixth to the ninth and get a future first. I was like, that's never going to happen, but go even further. Like, be willing to take a 12th, the 13th, right? The difference between 9 and 13 isn't that great, but the future first is a big difference, right? And you start looking at it that way, you're like, okay, like, I'd be very willing to sort of be flexible, but you want to accomplish your main goal. Those goals are being super flexible on the specific players, but addressing the you're dealing down, arbitraging down, in this type of concept through picks and getting additional assets. It works the same as players, right? It definitely works the same as players. And sometimes it can be even more possible with picks. So those would be the things that I'd really be looking at in terms of trying to build your depth. And remember, it's not a, right? This isn't a solution that needs to be made in June, right? Or even in July or August. This is a solution that can take weeks. It can take months. It can constantly be churning. And just remember, you could get to this year into week three, and all of a sudden what you thought was a real weakness actually turns out to be a great strength. And that would be something that I think you need to be, you know, open to. There's a lot of uncertainty, and if you're sort of going through a lot of the good roster building principles, what you might think is a weakness right now might actually not be. It might turn into being a neutral part of your roster, even a strength, and vice versa. What looks like a strength could be a weakness. So building in the flexibility, again, that's why I like to turn players into picks, because you don't necessarily know where the depth is going to be needed. But if you have the bullets to be able to fire in reserve when the time comes, you can fire them in the right direction. So that's really the way that I would look at it in terms of how to fix it, in terms of a depth issue. So I'm going to be doing more of these, and I'm writing about this. People have expressed some questions for me about it as well. And it's something that I want to, go through more of, some specific stuff in terms of like how to fix it and how to confront specific problems on your roster. So be on the lookout for more of these. Again, I'll be sprinkling in some guests here on some Sunday strategy sessions, but we'll cover a bunch of how to fix it over the summer. And until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.